All right, we are back. Another week, the Lions Collective, and I'm fired up. We got game week. Lions Packers this Sunday. It's the start tomorrow, technically, of the NFL season, but this Sunday, the start of the Detroit Lions season. I'm Jeff Iafredi from Crunch Time Sports. To my left, right, Justin Rogers, Detroit Football Network. We got Colton Pouncey from The Athletic, and, of course, Will Birchfield still living. Rumor has it he has not left America.
Back from suspension, baby. Back from suspension. I paid my fines off. You guys did a swell job without me, but I'm happy to be back.
Yeah. Yeah. And this guy got a chop.
I almost canceled our entire family vacay just to accommodate 6 to 7 on Wednesday last week, but I was like, I can't take that risk.
Vineyard Vines wouldn't let Will use their Wi-Fi.
Happy wife, happy life, Will. You know that.
Damn right, bro.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, this guy took a week off. He got a haircut. He saw the comments.
Check out his haircut on Fox 2 Sunday morning pregame show, 10 to 11. Hey. Don't miss it.
Yeah, I mean, he's looking fresh, the game week cut. And a lot of things happened, fellas, since the last time we were live. I mean, Micah Parsons is a Green Bay Packer. That happened actually.
It's the first time hearing of this.
The guy has left Comerica. He doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know what's happening right now. Yeah, Michael Parsons is a Green Bay Packer. That happened, I think, on Thursday. So the day after we were live, he becomes a Green Bay Packer. Massive trade. Now you have sports books favoring the Packers all of a sudden. Apparently the Packers are the team to beat out of nowhere. That's what happens, I guess, with a player like Michael Parsons. But now that we got you guys all, we're all together, what's kind of your reaction to this whole thing and the narrative around the NFC North? Because it seems like, again, the Lions are getting disrespected, but I don't think that's a bad thing because that might be where they want to be honest. They might like being in that spot. We heard it from Jared.
I'm really struggling here because Lions fans love being disrespected. Love it. It's the best. But yet they hate it at the expense of the Packers. Like, they're so mad at Vegas right now for thrusting the Packers on top lines. And I think what people forget sometimes is Vegas plays these odds because of the volume of bets coming in. So, they're probably manipulating or taking advantage a little bit of the money coming in on the Packers right now, I would guess. But look, the Packers were a good team before the acquisition of Michael Parsons. And there's no reason to sugarcoat it. Like, you just added one of the five best defensive players in football. They're a better team. I get it. They took away Kenny Clark. I don't think Kenny Clark has been a dominant, impactful player since about 2020, certainly against the run. I think it's better. I think the gap in the NFC North has narrowed. These were the top two teams before that trade. They're the top two teams now. And I don't know. I don't want to say it's a coin flip or anything. I think the road still goes through Detroit. But I don't think it's outlandish to say that the gap has closed and closed maybe significantly.
Yeah, the Parsons acquisition just feels like the latest additive move for the Packers in an offseason full of them. And I think the argument for Green Bay potentially surpassing Detroit, if you really wanted to make it, on top of the Lions' obviously loaded schedule and their obvious losses on the sideline and on the O-line, is that they've mostly supplemented or enhanced their roster this offseason. While most of, if not all of, the Lions' major additions mostly serve to fill holes. Like, DJ Reed replaces Carlton Davis. We'll see if that's an upgrade. If it is one, it's only a minor one because Carlton Davis played really well for this team last year. Their top two draft picks, Tyreek Williams, is in essence, at least for the first 2.5-3 months, replacing only McNeil. That's an immediate downgrade. Tate Ratledge is replacing, however you want to look at it, either Kevin Zeitler or Frank Ragnow, and that's a downgrade again in the immediate. And like Isaac Tesla, for as much as we've gushed about him in training camp and this summer, you know, most realistically will produce on par with what Tim Patrick did last year. Now, the reason I wouldn't make this argument is for a couple of reasons. One, I think it overlooks the fact that the Lions' biggest addition actually is a healthy Aiden Hutchinson. Like, they are reinserting a defensive player of the year caliber player into a premium position in their defense. And then I think it also overlooks the fact that Tyrion Arnold, to me anyway, seems poised for a really big year. So this defense while it might be missing McNeil in the middle, is in theory adding two players that it didn't have to the same extent that it will happen last year. And the Packers have holes of their own to plug. Like, they lost one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL in Jair Alexander. And I'd feel pretty uneasy if I were a Packers fan about entering this season with who, like, Nate Hobbs is that CB1 for the Packers in a division with some really talented receivers, certainly really all across the board. Now you could argue Chicago, Detroit, and Minnesota all have major weapons on the outside. So I understand the argument either from Vegas's perspective or the Packers' perspective, but I think we have to remember that the Lions, in theory, made the same move that Cowboys did in acquiring Parsons simply by getting Hutchinson, who also might be one of the five best defensive players in the NFL, healthy and back on the field.
Yeah, I struggle with the Packers a little bit, just kind of seeing the vision. And, like, when you look at the team, it's very well constructed, I'll say that. They got a lot of young talent that, like, in theory should grow together, and that's sort of what you want. And that's the way to build a team like that. I look at, you know, some of their offseason moves, getting a Matthew Golden, that's nice. You know, some of the pieces they filled in. But, like, I wasn't really moved until a move like this. And to me, I think it gives this young team that is already confident, but let's be honest, like, this group went 0-6 against the top three teams in the NFC, and the Eagles, the Vikings, and the Lions. And so I look at that roster and I'm like, they still have some room to grow. Like, I don't think they're, like, mentally ready to compete with a team like the Lions that certainly showed last year, a team like the Eagles, even the Vikings, I think are probably mentally stronger team than the Packers were last year. But to add a piece like Micah Parsons, one of the best defensive players in the league, I think it just gives you some confidence as a whole. Even though he's playing defense, it could help the offense. You heard Jordan Love talk earlier, like, oh, I'm already envisioning him getting, like, a sack on the first drive and forcing a three and out, like, stuff like that. You're already hearing the impact, and he hasn't even played a snap for them yet. So it legitimizes that defense for sure. It gives them some star power, which I think they needed. They kind of lack that. They have some good players, but not a ton of stars, I would say.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's a really good addition. I think anytime you have a chance to get a guy like that with the way that their current roster is constructed, where you can make a guy like that fit and worry about the money later. And, oh, by the way, you kind of screw over a division rival in the Lions and having to, you know, up that money for Aiden Hutchinson. It's kind of a win-win in my book. So I really like the move for them. I thought it might've cost a little more for them. It didn't. And, you know, who knows what kind of Micah they're going to get in week one. He hasn't practice all summer, and I think he's got the back injury right now, so it sounds like he's going to need to get a shot just to play. But so we'll see there. But, you know, I love the addition for him, and again, I think it just kind of gives him some star power and some added confidence going into a year like this, where, look, they're looking at the Lions. They took a, you know, you can say they're going to take a step back with the coordinators. I don't necessarily believe that, but that's what people are saying. The Vikings have a new quarterback. The Bears are the Bears until further notice. So I understand why people are kind of favoring that team and saying, all right, well, they can make a run this year.
I think we're going to get into all this as we kind of dive into the matchup later. But, you know, every time the Lions sign a player, right, it's, oh, is that guy play edge, right? Is that guy edge rusher? Is that guy a compliment? Does Micah Parsons play quarterback? I mean, that's what it really boils down to. That defense is good. It was a top 10 defense last year in yards and points and turnovers and sacks, all that stuff. It's a good defense. He makes that defense better. The question for me is, Packers offense, and it always, that conversation always centers around the quarterback. I think Jordan Love has potential. I don't think he took a step forward last year, and so the question is, can he take that step forward this year that he didn't last year? Otherwise, they're going to kind of struggle to surpass Detroit ultimately.
Yeah, it's hard when you have one of your biggest question marks is at the most important position in football. It's Jordan Love, and he's one of the more inconsistent players, which honestly is something that, when you look at a team like the Packers versus the Lions, in terms of personnel questions, you bring up Frank Ragnow, the interior offensive line, and then people, you know, they'll always say edge the defensive end two spot. But from a personnel standpoint, Packers versus Lions, like the Lions, that's why as a team, they are more talented, I believe, in most areas, but edge because Rashawn Gary and Micah Parsons. But at least you don't have questions about Jared Goff. Like, look at Jared Goff's record in the NFC North. Look at what he's done over the last couple of years. They're fine at quarterback, and especially from a head coaching standpoint, Dan Campbell's 6-2 against the Packers, 16-5 against the NFC North since 2021, when they had us four on the roster playing snaps. So, I'm just saying, in terms of, like, you know, Lions Packers, I just don't know how you can take the Packers over the Lions right now. I think to what Justin said earlier, which I do agree with, the gap's closer but they are the youngest team in football. Like, that has to matter. And I think when you have a question mark at the most important position, it definitely isn't something you can just gloss over. Like, Jordan Love, I already saw it already. It's Brett Favre won a Super Bowl at 27. Aaron Rodgers won a Super Bowl at 27. Jordan Love's 27. This is with Micah. If people believe it's a Super Bowl type of move, I just wouldn't take them over the Eagles. I wouldn't take them over the Lions. And there's other teams that I think you're probably – it's more of a toss-up, I believe. The Packers, I think, will get there. They still need to have another year with drafting and developing. But right now, it's certainly – I don't hate the move. I love it for the Packers. It's like, hey, we're all in. Usually they are a draft and develop team. They've been being more aggressive. Josh Jacobs signing, Micah Parsons. So they are trying to win. I will give them that. I do want to bring up, too, more the matchup kind of this week, because you kind of alluded to it, Justin, because Micah Parsons is a Packer. We don't know – he's going to play, and quite frankly, I don't care what injury he had. There's no way – if I'm working for the Packers medical staff, I'm not going to be the guy to not clear that trade. I'll just tell you. I'm not going to be the guy to go to the Packers and be like, we can't get this one done, boys. I'm clearing the trade. All right, that's what's going on. Even if he needs a shot or whatever the case may be. So
you find the doctor that cleared David Montgomery for the playoff game last year. Dr. Dan Campbell, the person of that guy in Green Bay. You find that guy with the white with the white doctor's trench coat, and you say, this guy's good.
That is exactly
that's
right.
Hilarious.
That's exactly right. And I think it's going to be interesting to see this Lions offense this week. Like, I am fired up about it. Johnny Moe, you know, versus this Packers deep. Halfley, who's done a really good job. And I saw something too. John Gruden, you know, he does amazing breakdowns in general, but he broke down the game specifically, and he brought up something that I actually never really thought about. Dan Campbell, we know he's aggressive. That's not anything new. But based on the numbers, he's actually more aggressive against the Packers historically, like through his tenure here with Detroit. The Packers just don't know how to handle it. And I don't know if it is the inexperience angle with the Packers. They are a young team. So when you see, I think a majority of the fourth down calls that the Lions have attempted have all been for touchdowns against the Packers. I don't know what's going on with that either. But I can see a game where it's like, hey, week one, you know the narrative with the Packers. It's a big game. You're in Lambeau. Like, we expect Dan to be aggressive every week, but I think this week is going to be another one of those, hey, you know, I think he's 6 of 7 in his career. I think the number is on fourth down calls against the Packers. I mean, that's a crazy percentage. Wow. I don't know why you wouldn't want to go for it this week, this Sunday against the Packers.
I feel like some of those numbers might be skewed by the second game these two teams played last year, when Campbell was going to go for every fourth down, almost no matter what, simply because he knew his defense was so ravaged by injury that the offense had to win them that game. I think – if he's being honest, he's approaching this game a little bit differently. I think what he's seen out of his defense over the course of training camp would persuade him to lean on them a little bit more in this game than his young offensive line. I also think, though, that just knowing Dan Campbell, he's going to want to put those young bucks on the interior to the test right away. And if there's an early 4th-and-2 near midfield, I think he's going to want to see what Mahogany and Ratledge can do playing on either side of Graham Glasgow and if they're up for the challenge early on. But I do think that he'll take a different philosophy into this game, given how healthy and how deep and impactful that defense looks like it is right now. I know in the past, a lot of those calls have been made out of necessity because the offense was so much better and so much more clearly the strength of the team than the defense. It does feel like that's beginning to shift, and that probably influences a little bit how he calls the game on Sunday, and maybe calls a lot of games this season.
I'd counter that the stat is skewed by having Tom Kennedy throw a touchdown pass in the first Dan Campbell year. That is the most aggressive move there is. Like, that is peak aggression from Dan Campbell.
I almost think Campbell sometimes plays mind games with the other NFC North coaches. Like, it's almost like, I don't want to call it an aura thing, but it's like, okay, try to stop us. And like, they couldn't stop him in that second game last year on all the fourth downs. And I agree with Will. I think part of that was defense was so decimated by then, they had to do it. But still, to line up and say, we're going to win this game with our offense, this is how it's going to get done. And then to do it, that is so demoralizing for an opposing defense, an opposing team, and a coach like Matt LaFleur, who I think that was the game before – like before the game started, that he was like arguing with the fan for some reason. The whole situation went down. And it's like, dude, just focus on your team. So I do think like he's got them shook a little bit sometimes when you kind of, and then know, they, later in the season, that Vikings game, like, it seemed like the Vikings tried to, like, play the Lions style. It's like, we're going to go for on fourth down ourselves. And they did not have the same success. So I almost feel like some of those decisions gets in the heads of, like, these other coaches, and they're trying to either be Dan Campbell or stop Dan Campbell, and, like, they just can't do it for whatever reason. So that's, like, the mental edge, I think, that this team has proven to have over this division. And, you know, it's on the Packers to prove that otherwise. And that starts in week one, and it's going to be a fun matchup. I'm sure we'll get to that later. But just in terms of everything that's going on so far, I'm excited. Like, football's back, man. Let's do it.
Yeah. I think Dan is also really cognizant of how to imbue his players with confidence. And what better way to establish your faith in Ratledge and Mahogany than on the first drive of the game on fourth and two, running behind them, like right through Devontae Wyatt, and saying, we got you guys. We believe in you, and we're going to follow you down the field. Like, he is so emotionally intelligent that it wouldn't surprise me to see him make that decision strategically as much as psychologically. Like, I want these guys to know that I and the entire offense believes in them. We're going to run behind them. And if you get those guys rolling, it can do big things, obviously, for this team.
Feel like Will's got a Christian Mahogany bias. I don't know why.
I mean, I don't want to be hiding.
Every time someone talks someone up, here on, comes man. Justin. Saying he's got a bias. Go ahead.
Every time Dan Campbell mentions Christian Mahogany in a press conference, Will just sits up like perks.
You heard Hank Fraley's Boston College shout out yesterday. He was talking about that offensive line pipeline running through Chestnut Hill, Matt.
I didn't hear it. I felt you sitting next to me just getting pumped up.
Yeah, I had to sit on my hands for a little bit. I wanted to hug Hank at the podium.
It's BC Eagles, man.
Big one Saturday night.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, it's fair. I mean, Christian Mahogany, the guy, I mean, best nickname might be in football. I mean, dirtbag. I mean, I don't know what's going on in BC.
One of those Jersey boys, it doesn't take a lot of crap. We've already seen him play like that at camp. I mean, he really does seek out as much contact as possible, and we'll see what kind of growth he needs to make in pass protection and certainly in handling different stunts the defensive line wants to pull. But I have all the faith in he and in Ratledge in being able to pave some lanes on the ground with the like requisite nastiness and snarl that this offense demands.
It's going to be really, really hard to ever top Amon-Ra St. Brown as the best day three draft pick for Brad Holmes. But I get this feeling like we're going to be talking about Mahogany in that way. Like I do. I thought he was phenomenal in those two starts last year.
Yep.
It was a small sample size. You wanted to see more. And I've said this before, but I think he had quietly one of the best camps of any player on the roster. I'm not worried about that spot in the slightest.
What about another spot? And I don't think it's a spot that I think it's a spot that gets a lot of unfair criticism. I think Taylor Decker last year, people immediately assume, you know, because he basically, and there's, you know, people always say if you limp into an NFL season, you'll probably limp out of an NFL season. Taylor Decker limped into last year. I mean, he was getting hurt, and then he basically limped out of it. He was hurt pretty much all year. He didn't look the same at times, and there was times where he did. This year, he's healthy. He had cleanup surgery in the offseason, and there is no doubt. I'll tell you one thing. Michael Parsons does not want to see Penei. We've seen that over. It just history doesn't lie, and I'm not saying that it's I'm not one of those guys on Twitter that's like, he stands no chance against Penei Sewell. But what I'm saying is, ideally, you want to put him and line him up against Taylor Decker. But also, I was in attendance on Thanksgiving when Rashawn Gary took his lunch money. And that happened, too. And he had three sacks on Taylor Decker. So I think in this matchup, offensive line-wise, I want to see Tay, obviously. Christian, I want to see, but we spoke about it. I'm very confident in what we kind of saw in flashes last year. Penei, no question marks. Graham, you kind of know what he is. Yeah, I mean, in the interior, I think we'll have more of an easier job. But Taylor Decker's going to have a tough one on Sunday. No matter who he's matching up against, they're going to try and throw the kitchen sink at him, and he's probably going to have to get, whether it's a little help from Sam Laporta or whoever, maybe someone, one of the running backs. But I think Taylor Decker this week, for me, under a little bit of a spotlight. I'm not concerned about it, but it's something to watch a matchup-wise this week, for sure.
That's Pro Bowler Taylor Decker? Is that what you're talking about?
What'd you say?
Pro Bowler Taylor Decker? Is that the guy you're talking about?
That apparently is old as dirt, and he's 31 years old. That's what I get told a lot. He's old as dirt. He can't play. That's what I was told.
Look, he's had some hiccups the last couple of years where he hasn't had his best football, and maybe he's not peak consistency Taylor Decker that he was early in his career, but you know, it's just the classic case of, you know, a guy I think kind of being undervalued. It doesn't help that you have a Penei Sewell on the roster who's just so unbelievably good that it just casts the tallest of shadows, and it's really tough to, you know, compare anybody, let alone Taylor Decker, to that. But you know, there's a lot worse places the Lions could be at left tackle. I don't see that as a weakness either. And yeah, there's probably some rust to knock off with just being out a little bit during training camp. I think we saw that on the practice field with some of the matchups he had against Davenport and Hutchinson. But if there's a guy that could help you knock off rust a little bit faster than most, it's Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah, I'll also say in Taylor's favor, I don't think it was a coincidence that once he got back on the field in full capacity this camp, the offensive line finally began moving bodies as a unit. And his first practice back was that first joint practice against the Dolphins. And that was the first time we had really seen the starting five offensive linemen on the field together in camp. And that was their best showing to that point. And they were pretty impactful from that point on. And Taylor Decker does a lot of communicating that might go overlooked on the far left edge of the line compared to maybe the center. But his ability to help those guys get aligned up front can't be overlooked. And like we heard Hank Freely talking a couple of days ago or yesterday about how this offensive line can block everything as long as they abide by their rules. And no one knows the rules of this offensive line better than Taylor Decker. If he gets beat, it might be because he isn't as nimble as he used to be, and because either Parsons or Gary beats him with a move that maybe he doesn't have quite the athleticism anymore to match. But it won't be because he misses an assignment or is unsure of where he's supposed to be. And it won't be because of the way he finishes. He still finishes with physicality. So I think once you saw him rejoin that group, you understood just how important he is, not just as a left tackle, but to the players along that offensive line, especially those young ones.
Yeah, last year, I think people don't really realize just how much pain he was playing through last year. And like, he's not one to talk about himself, but caught up with him a little bit this summer. And he mentioned he was playing through a torn rotator cuff and then had to get like some other stuff taken care of and cleaned up this offseason. And that set him back a little bit to start training camp. But the reason why he wanted to get it done is when he did is that he would have no lingering issues going into the season. And that's super important to have, you know, one of your best players, but also a veteran on that unit there for all the young pups that are learning on the fly. And even though he's not playing that interior position, he's still a voice for them, a sounding board, just a mentor to all those young guys, not just, you know, Giovanni Manu, but even the young guys in the interior as well. So having his presence out there when you have three other 24-year-olds on the field, Penei being included, but still he's 24 years old. Yeah. I think you forget that sometimes.
Yeah.
That's huge. And so, yeah, and things did get so much better when he returned to the field. Some of that
like
just
immediately.
Some of that's just because Dan Skipper and Giovanni Manu and DeMarco Jones aren't going against Hutch every other play. But just having that cohesion and being able to get some practice time together. Because if he just delayed that into the season, then it's, oh, week one, we're going to wait for him. You don't really have that time to gel with a new group and so many moving parts here. The fact that he was able to return and get some snaps with that group, and I'm sure it was like riding a bike for him, but just to have that experience with the rest of those young guys, that's going to pay dividends early on in the season, I think. And I really think this offensive line started to turn the corner in that second half of training camp, and it's no coincidence that it happened when he returned.
And I just want to add a little context here because, you know, to say Decker maybe had a down year or whatever, you know, Pro Football Focus, not the end all be all, but I really do enjoy some of their statistical metrics more than their grades. And
like Roger Decker being the best pass rusher in preseason. Remember that
100%. That's what I'm getting at.
I'm just floating it out there.
But like, so they have pass blocking efficiency, right? Like how often does a guy allow a pressure, and those are weighted versus pressure hit sacks, right? Decker's career, 96.6 out of 100. Last year, 95.9. I mean, just a tick off of what he's always been. He's still very good. And like, again, I just don't have many concerns at that spot.
Yeah. I think the best way to answer for his reliability is just if you canvassed the league's GMs, how many of them would honestly replace their left tackle with Taylor Decker. And it would be a good number. It would be a good number that would happily take Taylor Decker and his 10 demonstrated years of success at one of the hardest positions over whatever they might have on their roster. And I at that position especially, I think the most important attribute is dependability. And that is certainly what Decker provides.
Yeah, if people ever had a torn rotator cuff and you're playing left tackle, that sounds like an absolute nightmare. So, yeah. And then he had a slight undertick in his performance. Unacceptable, Taylor. Yeah.
How dare you?
Freaking rotator.
Yeah, you make us write with carpal tunnel. We'll be writing like 100 word stories max.
Yeah, I think a question I would want to ask you guys is, and for Johnny Morton's debut, right? Like, what would be a good performance from Johnny Morton in the offense? What would that have to look like for you? Whether it's, if you want to go whatever they did against the Jags last year or the AFC South, cool. But is there anything specific for you that after Sunday at 4:25, whenever the game ends, close to 8 o'clock, where you're sitting there going, that was a good day from Johnny Mo in the offense. What does it have to look like to you guys?
It's a good question.
Go ahead, Will.
I would just say, I think it's more important for this to look like a Dan Campbell offense and a Johnny Morton offense, like, because those guys are working together, and we know what the Lions have been under Dan Campbell, and I don't think they want that to change too much. So, like, to me, you call it a Lions offense more than just one person, because, you know, that's really what this is about. So, to me, it's like, if they can run the ball, and I think Will said it perfectly at the beginning of the show, it's like, if you're giving those guys confidence in the interior and you're having success, especially now that Kenny Clark is out of the division, which a lot of guys are happy about, especially Campbell. Like, if you're having success and that's how you start the game, and you're like, because Campbell has these visions for how every game is going to go. And it's really uncanny how he can just predict. And a lot of times he'll just tell us in a press conference, like, well, it's going to come down the wire. You know, we're going to kick a field goal with 3 seconds left. We're going to win the game. Like, not that detailed, but, you know, it's funny how he like kind of plans these things out. So he also starts games like that as well. Like certain drives are with and there's intent there. And so I think if he comes out and there's, hey, you can't stop us with our run game. We have two of the best backs in the league. Just because we have some new starters in the interior, we're still the Lions. Like, this is how we play football. We play big boy football over here in Detroit. You got to catch up to our speed. And if that's how he wants to take it, that to me is Lions football. That's what I think about when I think about Dan Campbell and just how he operates, and whether it's Ben Johnson's offense or Johnny Moe's offense or his offense, it doesn't really matter to me. I think it's just the personnel that they've collected here working as one to show that identity that they've created over the year. So I don't really have a goal in mind. If you want to say 350, 400, that gets the job done and you're scoring points and you win the game, sure, if that's all it takes, then fine. But to me, it's just establishing that identity that you haven't gone anywhere. This is still the same team, got the same nucleus of players. Yeah. The coaches are still, even though the coaches are different, it's the same vibe here, and that's not going to change as long as Campbell, Holmes, the whole crew's in place.
Yeah, to Colton's point, I go back to their opening couple drives in Green Bay last year when it felt like every time they handed the ball off to Demo or Gibbs, they were peeling off like 7-8 yards, and they were looking at second and two or second and three on almost every series and avoiding third downs altogether. And they took like, I think, a 21-3 lead into halftime of that game and just had the Packers defense beaten down and almost defeated by the time the second half began. And that is exactly how Dan Campbell wants to impose his team onto another. And that's also how you access the play action pass. And that has been the very essence of this offense for 3 years now, is running the ball firmly and consistently between the tackles to open up the passing game. And I think that's what you hope it looks like on Sunday. And then if I was just going to add one specific, I think a lot of fans would be really encouraged to see Sam Laporta come out of that game on Sunday, having made an impact, having made himself felt, not just obviously as a blocker, but as a pass catcher. I know I still believe he's poised for a huge year. And I think Sunday is a good chance for himself to announce that to the rest of the NFC North.
I'm with Colton here. You know, it's not a yardage goal or a points goal. You know, they don't care if they win 17-16 or 35-34. you know, for me, I'm looking at execution in the critical situations, in the third downs, in the red zone. What we've been told about John Morton is he's obsessive about the game planning, about breaking down and finding mismatches. He has all the weapons in the world to exploit mismatches. And he said that at the combine, right? I feel like a kid at a candy store with Gibbs and Laporta and St. Brown and J-Mo. Like, he has arguably the best arsenal in all football to work with. And so what is he calling on those third and six calls at midfield that's going to be the difference between, you know, punting or kicking a field goal? What is it going to be third and goal at the four that's you know, the difference between 7 points and three or zero, depending on whether the Lions go for it on fourth down? I want to see that expertise in finding and exploiting mismatches in the critical situations. And there's no mystery to this Packers defense. They're going to rush four and they're going to drop seven. They're, I don't want to say basic. I mean, there's still coverage disguises and all that, but you know what you're walking into. Show me that you can take advantage of the tools that you have in a meaningful way.
Yeah, I think one interesting thing about Morton that we've learned from his time here in 2022 is that he would be dissecting film of the opposing team's defensive coordinator until hours before kickoff on Sunday, trying to identify his tendencies to help Ben Johnson at the time stay a step ahead in his play calling. Like, he, to use Jay Rogers' word, is obsessive. This is a guy that is getting to the facility like at 3:30 in the morning every single day. And he grinds tape, not just of his own team and not just of the opposing defenses, but opposing coaches and coordinators to know when they might show a particular look that he can attack. So really intrigued to see, again, in those critical spots, what he dials up schematically to, in theory, take advantage of a look that he might be anticipating from that Packers defense.
By the way, Will, you brought up Sam Laporta. Don't forget Pope blessed Sam Laporta. Yeah. that's the storyline. That's a story, fellas, for you guys. All right. How does the Pope affect Sam Laporta? All right. That's interesting. We're going to see this Sunday. Hey, I have to tell the people, this is big. I think we're making it big, fellas. All right. We have our first ever sponsor of the show, which, by the way, allow me to get Will in here as well. I am going to tell you about our friends over at Sleeper. Which you can use the code HMA to get a $100 deposit match up to $100. And I'm going to tell you more about them right after a word from our sponsor. Be right back.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
Look at that. Sleeper.
That was sweet.
The sponsor of Lions Collective. It's the best way to experience and connect over sports together. A one-stop shop for all your sports needs. I'm sure you guys have used Sleeper Fantasy, but now you can use Sleeper Picks, which is a real money product that connects friends over picks. All you got to do is choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players from pregame. You can do it live or even across different sports. You just hit more or less than the predicted stats, and you can win up to 1,000x payouts. All right, share with your friends.
Like the sound of that. Together,
and always remember, gamble responsibly, of course. All right, don't gamble anything you aren't willing to lose. All right, just want to make sure we're responsible here at Lions Collective. but I've already put my picks in. I got Dave Montgomery over 0.5 TDs. I got Jack, I think, over 3.5 assisted tackles. Like, these things are on there. All right, yeah. So go over and check out Sleeper Picks and Sleeper Fantasy. All right, let's get back to the show.
And if you lose, just blame Jeff.
If you lose, my DMs are open. All right, so you can, you can go in there. All right, I respond to DMs too. So you get out there and you DM me. All right, I'll take them. Shout out to Sleeper for that one. But we went through the Lions offense, kind of what we expect to see. I am fired up to see Calvin Shepard in this defense. I'm so, and it's not just from a coaching perspective, but more so personnel perspective, because Calvin just went on GQ Trevor Thompson's show and talked about Aaron Arnold and how he thinks, besides Hutch, obviously, with the bionic leg, which I know, you know, he had a great moment the other day. I mean, you guys
were back dying.
Yeah, like there's
bro, nothing. That took him a full 10 seconds to recover from.
He had to reboot.
The tape, I went back and watched that a couple times. It was 10 full seconds for him to gather himself. He actually caught himself off guard.
Listen, anyways.
It was like, early MVP for moment of the year.
Yeah, that was one. I was like, Aiden, I don't even think you needed that there. No. I think you were fine. I think, I think, but you know what? That's why we love him. He's the greatest. And Calvin, you know, talked about how great he's been. But he said, Terron Arnold, man. And you guys have, well, we've spoken about this multiple times, but Calvin even doubled down on that and said, Terron's been great. But this defense as a whole, you get to see Aiden debuted after his coming back from injury. You get to see all these players with the steps they're taking. Jack Campbell now with the green dot. So I think defensively, and I've already went through Jordan Love and how I do think he has to prove through 17 games and beyond he can be consistent. This is a defense that is fired up, a defense that is ready to kind of take on, hey, it's been about the offense over the last couple of years. Calvin, he keeps these guys fired up. I want to see what this defense looks like on Sunday. And I think in Lambeau, even without Aleem, which I think obviously hurts, but Ty Leek's first game, I want to see that D-line a little bit too, because I think Aiden Davenport, I know Davenport's only played last year, was only in two games, but people forget, like, the injury concerns are real, but the guy can actually play football. Like, he's not a bad player. So I want to see kind of this D-line, how they work, and more so the secondary, because I do think on paper, this secondary on paper is one of the best secondaries in the NFL, just depending on what Terron Arnold looks like this year, which by all praises has been pretty good. So I'm excited.
Yeah, Arnold is one of the more studious players in the Lions locker room, and you might not take him for that because he has this boisterous personality that you wouldn't envision in a library, but no player watches more film than he does. Like, I was talking to him about this a couple days ago. He said he watched on average 4 hours of film every single day this offseason, and I believe him when he says that, mostly because he is a football junkie. He can't get enough of the game. And, you know, we have seen that film study show up a lot in training camp, just with the ability to not just locate the ball in the air, but then, you know, in phase, make plays on it. And I think playing across from DJ Reed, he's poised for a really big season that will justify the Lions drafting him where they did. And then can we get to Hutchinson for a minute? I feel like we need to hit this. I can't stress enough how well he was playing last year. I just went back to double check this today, but he was leading the NFL in pass rush win weight per Pro Football Focus last year at 38.3%. And the next closest player was Myles Garrett at 23%, nice, followed by these edge rushers, Micah Parsons, Nick Bosa, and Trey Hendrickson at 20%, followed by Jared Verse, Chop Robinson, and Za'Darius Smith. But I digress. But
too soon.
Playing at a level that was so much higher than anyone else at his position last year. And you know, we've heard that he looks even better this year than he did last. And Campbell yesterday was talking about, you know, his ability to bend, his hand mechanics, his hips, his flexibility is all improved. And I think one thing that gets overlooked or at least undervalued in Hutchinson, for as much as we talk about his motor and his athleticism and his relentlessness, is his football acumen. Like, we forget what a cerebral player he is. And, you know, it's one thing to hone your mechanics in your hands or add new pass rush moves in practice. It's quite another to then know when and how to deploy them in a game. Like, for example, last year, Hutch almost exclusively had a spin move to the outside. He and the coaches worked a lot on developing a spin move to the inside. And so if we go back to week three last year against the Cardinals, which is actually one of the most recent games that he's played, as crazy as that is to say, he was battling that day with Paris Johnson Jr., who has become one of the better, maybe even one of the best young left tackles in the NFL. And all day long, he was hitting Johnson with this chop move, chop move, chop move, chop move. And he was waiting to break out the spin. Late in the fourth quarter, defense is trying to close out the game. Hutchinson hits him with the same chop move, but then pairs it with this inside spin, catches Johnson totally off balance and gets home for the sack. And like, that's an example of his football IQ at work. He knows like when and how to maximize everything he has in his pass rushing arsenal. And having talked with him about it, to him, it's all about making a different move look like the same move until like the moment of impact. And I'm curious to see how he utilizes his hands, his improved mechanics, his improved flexibility this year, kind of in conjunction with his football IQ. I think we're going to see all kinds of different developments for Hutch this year, including one, Jay Rodz, that you saw in camp that was unlike any move we had seen him use at any point over his Lions career.
I still think it might have been an accident. I don't know. He like started a spin move, stopped halfway between, shuffled past Sewell, and Sewell looked at him like he was crazy because it didn't make any sense. It looked like he was moonwalking past the offensive tackle, and he won the rep. And I asked him about the other day, and I mean, even Hutchinson looked at me like I was crazy, like he didn't remember it. So I don't know what happened there, but you know, I do think that there are going to be maybe irrational expectations on Hutchinson because some of the numbers you brought up, right? Like these rates were so much higher than everybody else. But what we're not talking about is, you know, he kind of caught this wave of inferior talent to start last year. There was a lot of injuries on this line schedule. And talk about taking advantage of mismatches. Even that game against the Cardinals, you know, he lined up against the right tackle 36 times versus the left tackle 17 times. And so the Lions were very adept at putting him in positions to take advantage of an inferior talent that allowed him to, you know, build up this massive lead. And I think there's going to be this situation where we talk about the Lions, they might be a better team this year, but they probably won't win 15 games, right? Hutchinson might be a better player. He might not have two sacks a game for the entire season. Like he still might finish with 12, 14 sacks, whatever, and still be a clearly better player than he was last year, which, by the way, it's crazy. It's crazy because when you have a serious injury like that, we talk about all the time. We talk about very recently with DJ Reader. We could talk about it with Graham Glasgow. When you break a leg or you tear a quad muscle, it's usually the second year back that really you kind of return to physical form. And there's nothing we've seen on the practice field that doesn't suggest that Hutchinson has kind of cleared all those hurdles, that he's 100% of the way back or 110% of the way back, depending on whether you want to believe in the improvement. Now, eight months after the injury, 9 months after that injury, it's baffling to me.
Yeah, I've been talking to some people close to Hutch recently, and like everything I hear, and going back to like his first injury at Michigan, we had this ankle injury and it ended a good season. He was thinking about coming out for the draft that year, ends up coming back. Everyone I've talked to said his work ethic and that rehab and just getting back on that relentless work to get back on the field was unlike anything they've seen. And like this is a guy that puts no limitations on himself. Just talking to how he's attacked this most recent rehab cycle, you know, probably started back up around February, spring, and was, you know, kind of maybe some early mental hurdles, but once he got the rhythm and was actually putting weight on his leg again and, you know, running and jumping, like he was like, okay, I feel good, let's do this. And that's right now he's probably thinking about setting the NFL single season sack record. Like that's the way he thinks. He's a long-term thinker. He has all these goals. There's a story about how when he was in middle school or elementary school, he said, I'm going to play at Michigan, and he did it. He became a Heisman finalist. So this is a guy that, like, in his mind, and to his credit, he's pulled this off pretty much every step of the way. Why not? That's his whole mindset. And like to pair that mindset with the athletic ability that he has, because anyone can be like the try harder on the football team that's like, oh, why not me? And then you have physical limitations that say, why Rudy. Not you? Yeah. You know, that's not the case for this dude. He was a second overall pick for a reason. Like, he's a freak. He can bend, he can spin, he can move. You see the dance background on the field translating. Like, all of this stuff is like in his arsenal, in his tool bag. And you see him picking up new things all the time. And like, it's not a surprise. It wouldn't surprise me if he's still trying to like, hey, what can I add? You know, I feel good from injury. Now, what can I add on top of that? How can I stack that? So I'm not putting any limitations on this dude. Like, he is one of the fiercest competitors I've ever seen on the field. And, you know, who am I to say he can't replicate those numbers? And I know it was against, you know, inferior talent, but you're going to face guys like that in this league. Offensive linemen kind of drop a lot in this league. So who's to say he doesn't get another run like that and takes advantage and does what he's supposed to do against those types of players?
Yeah.
Before we get off the topic of defense, I really want to talk about the thing I'm looking most forward to seeing. It's the effectiveness of the blitz. You know, we saw the blitz all camp and against the Lions offensive line just have success day after day after day after day. And the Lions were the second most blitzing team last year in pass situations, only behind the Vikings. But I don't think they had a linebacker with more than a dozen pressures. Like, they didn't have anybody that was really good at it. And I think that's an area where Shepard has been fine-tuning how they disguise the intent of the blitzes, who is coming. And you see Campbell, Barnes, Anzalone, Branch, Amik, like all of them are finding their ways in the backfield. And even some of the backups in Nowoski and Grant Stewart. And so I want to see if they can tap into that more, because if the line is as good as we think it is, and then you add a fifth rusher with the offensive line occupied, I think there's just a ton of potential for the defense to take a leap there more than maybe anywhere else.
I think a fair question too, because it's something I've talked about the last couple of days, and I'm curious to know what you guys think. Besides Hutch, right, and you kind of alluded to it with the blitzing, because there is a player I'm excited to see, but is there any other impact players on defense you kind of get your eye on or Lions fans should look out for on Sunday besides Hutch, that if the Lions win this game, this player, X player, will play a big part in it? Besides 97, of course, because he's
going to play. Will's going to say Brian Branch. So
No, he's going to say Christian.
I gave my ode to Brian Branch last time, and I've shot my mahogany bullets this time. I don't know if this answers your question, but one player that I am very intrigued to watch this year is Derek Barnes, because it felt like he was coming into his own in this defense last year when he got hurt in that Cardinals game that I was just talking about. And you know, we saw him play some of that Sam linebacker that Aaron Glenn really had a predilection for in his defense. And I think Shepard will use him in slightly different ways, but that's a guy that could boost the pass rush at a place that some fans might not be expecting it. And, you know, he obviously has the ability to burst into the backfield. And if they can find ways to either blitz him from depth or let him rush from like a stand-up edge position like that Sam linebacker sometimes does, I think he can give them a pass rush boost that others might not be expecting.
I tricked Will. I'm going to take Branch.
Nice.
Oh,
I got it. No, like I talked about, like, you know, nobody having a major impact as a blitzer. I thought Branch, particularly early in camp, stood out as one of the most effective. And you add another tool to the Swiss Army knife type player that he is. There's, you know, so much about kind of what different guys are going to do and their assignments within the defense. Like, Branch, it changes every week. And that's kind of the beauty of it. I trust him in man-to-man coverage on third down, which you can't say about many safeties. He plays that robber role really, really well in kind of their cover one look, where he kind of floats on the underneath and finds a way to, you know, Kirby intercepts 8 passes. It gets lost that Branch had 4. Like, that's really productive turnover generation on top of, you know, the proclivity for punching the ball out every so often. Now you're telling me he can blitz and blitz more frequently. I think he is going to be an absolute menace for opposing offenses to deal with this year.
Is it a stretch to say Branch finishes 3rd in sacks? Is that crazy? I don't know.
A little bit, but I like it. I like it.
That's
a
bold prediction. Bold prediction. Yeah. Not a regular prediction, but bold one.
Yeah, yeah. Don't take that on Sleeper. But just know that it's an option.
maybe the health.
Hey, you can DM Colton for that one.
That's
fine. If Brian Branch has like 5 sacks and that ends up being like 3rd or 4th, I would not be surprised on this team, just because that's how often they're using him, sending him. Yeah. You know, I guess I spent my entire last answer talking about Hutch, so I'll talk about Terrion, the guy that we initially were talking about there. And like, he has been so impressive in camp. And I think on that podcast, Shep didn't want to give him too much love or praise because he didn't want to go into his head or him, you know, yapping around the building about it. But Terrion has been awesome. And I'm really curious to see how much he grows this year, because the Lions tend to have these guys kind of break out. Like, it was Jack Campbell the year before him. Like, you see these guys, for whatever reason, the light bulb clicks at a certain point for them, and it's hit with pretty a high regularity with some of these guys, especially the early round picks, right? And so Terrion was a guy, I think our guy at The Athletic, Dane Brugler, had him 10th overall on his board. before the draft. He falls to 24. The Lions go up and get him. And the Lions were so particular about the types of like corners they went after. They weren't going to, you know, sacrifice anything if they were going to draft one in the first or second round as with a high pick like that. A lot of people wanted them to get Devin Witherspoon. If he falls to six that year, maybe they just stay there and take him. He was selected fifth. But he kind of fit their identity, that mindset, that like tenacity, especially that Aaron Glenn wanted out of those corners. They didn't get him. They get Terrion the next year. And Terrion is wired exactly the way they want these guys to be wired. And like last year, I know the numbers didn't look great on surface. If you're just watching PFF grades, you might be a little disappointed. But that dude was sticky in coverage. Mm-hmm. And like that stuff is hard to teach.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like he had that. The stuff that he needed to work on was positioning, technique, penalties, when to play the ball when it's in the air. All that stuff to me is correctable, and it comes with experience, and it comes with the extra, you know, detail refining that he got this training camp. And even with a missed time here and there, like, you know, Shep said himself, the work that DeShay Townsend has done with Terrion, you can see it on the field, and he wouldn't be surprised if he becomes a CB1 for this defense. And if that's the case, you might have two CB1s. Yeah. And like, because DJ Reed is pretty damn good.
Amik would say you have three.
He would say you have three.
Yeah. Just saying.
So, I mean, that's a pretty good – then you look at that secondary, and you're talking about who's better in the NFL than this collective group. Like, the Ravens, they got some guys over there. Like, yeah. It's hard to name. Like, it's probably counted on one hand, the secondaries that can match with this Lions secondary if it goes to, according to plan. But, I mean, Terrion's really the key to it all. If he raises his level, and that's the sort of internal growth that kind of goes – you know, overlooked when you're looking at just free agency additions and whatever, like that, him jumping from the player who was last year to a stud corner in this league is like getting a star corner
right.
in free agency. It's the same effect year to year. So I'm very curious to see how he performs this year.
Yeah. Colton, you nailed it. You nailed it with the word experience, right? Like that's why these guys make that year one, year two jump. Terrion played 1,000 snaps last year between the playoff game. That's 1,000 snaps. Like that's a ton of banked physical knowledge that he didn't have coming into this league. And that flattens the curve more than anything. I mean, that is why I think he's hit the ground running with this confidence is the wrong word. The kid is insanely confident, but like, it's different. It's physically showing up. And I think that's the reason. And I'm going to continue to make the comparison. It's Darius Slay all over again for me. He came from the SEC. He had to go through the rookie lumps of learning how to play the ball, not the man, to lean on the footwork and not the hands, which caused the penalty issues earlier. Slay went through those the same lumps in year one, and then it clicked in year two. And I still think that we're seeing that same progression toward a Pro Bowl, I'm not saying Pro Bowl year two, but Pro Bowl caliber cornerback long term.
Yeah, and of those 1,000 snaps, J-Raj, I think 999 were in man coverage. I mean, he played more man coverage snaps than not just any rookie corner, but any corner period in the NFL last year. And if you go back and look at the numbers, he held up really darn well in man. Most of the damage against Terrion came when he was in zone coverage. And I think that the film study that he has been so committed to all offseason will also pay dividends in that regard, knowing how he fits in to his zone scheme relative to the players around him. And when I asked him, what he envisions for the secondary this year, I just said, hey, look, if this secondary as currently constructed stays healthy with Kirby Joseph and Brian Branch and you and DJ Reed and Amik, this secondary will be fill in the blank. And he said, top five in the league. And I was actually surprised he didn't say best in the league.
I'm sure
he
didn't say best.
Yeah, seemed a little understated.
That's not a CB1 right there. That's not a CB1.
No, yeah. But also asked him, you know, what was his reaction when he saw the schedule and saw most notably that they'd be playing in the first 10 games, Jordan Love, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts and Jaden Daniels all on the road. He was like, opportunity. I mean, you guys probably saw the interview that he did with Kay Adams where he said he wants to pick Jaden Daniels more than any other player quarterback in the NFL. And I think those other five guys might be on his list too. He obviously has the swagger and the belief that he's going to do big things this season.
Before we end the show here, we have 5 minutes left. I need to get your score predictions here, fellas. And I'm gonna be, hey, I'll tell you one thing. There's some substance in these score predictions. I'm going to be writing them down. I'm writing these down, and we're going to revisit them next week just to see the accuracy of these babies. Because historically, I've been trash at score predictions, but I'm trying to change it here on Lions Collective. So we're going to start off. Will, you could start first. So give me your score prediction.
What's the current spread? Is it 2.5?
I think last night it was. I can check right now, actually. I think it might be still 2.5.
Lions getting 2.5?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Man. I love being put on the spot with a score prediction that will inevitably be incredibly wrong. During our podcast last year, we reached a point midseason where we ignored the spread and just began picking what number we would need to be offered to take the other team, because the Lions were blowing spread out of the water. And I think at one point I asked for like 25 points in the Jags game, and they still wound up covering. I don't think, and I'm not alone in this assumption, that this offense will be quite as well oiled out of the gate. I do think that the defensive health and ability compensates for that. And I think we see a bit of a lower scoring game on Sunday. So cue up a 45-42 shootout. But I'll stick to my guns here. And I will take the Lions to win this game. I'll take the Lions to win it 20-17. And I think this game is sealed if we each want to make a specific prediction by a sack, not by Hutchinson, and not by first-round pick Tyreek Williams, but by Marcus Davenport. I think that's how this game is sealed for the Lions. I'll take Detroit 2017 over Green Bay on Sunday.
Wow. I'll go a little bit higher because, I don't know, man. They do return a lot. Just the interior of the offensive line is the only question mark. But they got talent. You just got to see it.
Right.
I think – I like where your head's at. I'll go 24-20 Lions. That's where I'll settle. And that's, of course, going to be wrong. Yeah. Very, very, very wrong.
We should have done over-under how many field goals Dan Campbell will allow Jake Bates to kick at like 0.5.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of scanning the injury reports and the weather, all the stupid stuff you look at when trying to make these assessments. And I find it almost comical that the Packers got rid of Jair Alexander because of injuries and Nate Hobbs missed practice this week or missed practice on Wednesday. So that's great for them. Also Jaden Reed is out, which is not great. I don't know what, their game status are, but certainly not trending in a positive way to start the week. I'm going to take Detroit as well. And apparently we're having a slappy homer fest here, but what are you going to do? I also think it might be a little bit higher scoring as, the teams kind of uncage all the frustration of not playing during the preseason. Give me, 27 points. That means 2 Jake Bates field goals. I don't know, but 27-24.
Yeah, well, give me the pack. No, I'm just kidding. On Alliance.
Do it. Do it, you coward.
We got some score predictions in the chat, too, we could highlight.
I will. Full transparency. Don't worry. We'll get to some games this year. We'll get to those games. I do got some games. I'm sorry, Lions fans. I'm picking against the Lions. But this one, I think the Lions win this game. Actually, Justin, we're off by a single point. I have 27. Actually, when you were doing the Jake Bates thing, I was like, that's the same thing I was thinking about. I'm like, they have to kick how many field goals for this? Yeah. I mean, they got to get 27. I am going 27-23. It's a weird number. I'm picking the Packers to kick more field goals. But we all have the Lions winning here, and then they start off 1-0 in the division against the favorite in the NFC North, according to Sports.
Right, right.
That's right.
Yeah, the juggernaut, not just the time defending champs who are 15-5 in the division. 15-3 over the past 3 seasons, right? In the NFC North. Yeah, not those guys. The team that it was 0-6 against the best teams last season.
Yeah, that's how it is, man. Love it. Love the national media. That's why you guys listen to local media. So we appreciate you. Yeah, we'll be back next Wednesday.